Our old friend Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States, author of your Declaration of Independence, is on the phone. President Jefferson, welcome back to WGN in Chicago. How are you, sir?
Good day to you, citizen.
I got a couple questions for you. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and by the way, we invited you to come on today because you are going to be on stage with me Saturday, August 18th at the College of DuPage. We've done many conversations there. Tickets have just gone on sale today. Go to WGNradio.com. Go to WGNradio.com, and there's a link to them right now. You can get the best seats in the house. They have just gone on sale. We expect another sellout. We expect this show to sell quickly. So WGNradio.com for our COD show, and that'll be Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. I was going to bring you a bottle of...
Meriwether Lewis's birthday. Did you know that? Meriwether Lewis, my young protege, who made the journey all the way to the Pacific Ocean and back again. One of the greatest explorers in the history of North America. He was born on August 18th.
I did not know that, but I'll make a note to bring that up. Maybe we could have a cake. Or toast him. I was actually thinking about you the other day because I was at a store and they had Thomas Jefferson, I think it was bourbon. There was a brown liquor I could buy, and it had your name on the label. Maybe we'll throw back a shot before the show, something like that.
We could, although I never drank spirituous liquor. I drank wine, of course, the finest wine that I could afford, and Bordeaux whenever possible. I did not drink Applejack or whiskey or gin, but, of course, they existed in my time. And I don't think I particularly like my name being used to sell something that intoxicates the American people.
Would you have minded your name on anything else? Thomas Jefferson furniture, the Jefferson car, something like that? There's a Lincoln I could buy. How about your name just as a brand in general? How would you feel about that?
Well, I don't really think we should commercialize our statesman, but if you were going to use my name on something, it should be on a library or some sort of word processing machine. I had a pantograph that I used in my own lifetime, something that is Jeffersonian, but I wouldn't put it on a scooter or a pair of skates or something. I think it should be something that has to do with the Enlightenment, don't you?
Maybe so. Yeah, that would be appropriate, but trust me, if somebody... But if there was an energy drink or, it doesn't matter, sweat socks, if somebody wanted to use the name, I think they would.
Dueling pistols, perhaps. That would be Hamilton.
Yeah, no kidding. I got a couple of other more relevant questions for you. How about this one? Our president is at odds with the media. He's claimed that they are the enemy of the people. But you sure didn't get along with the media either. How similar or dissimilar were your views on the American media as compared to our president now?
I'll take that question very seriously, sir. The First Amendment is not an absolute, but it is a practical absolute. And it's a test for statesmen because almost every president, George Washington, John Adams, my two proteges, Madison and Monroe, felt that the press was unfair to them, that the press had it in for them, that they published only negative things, or that they misunderstood or deliberately misunderstood the policies of their administrations. And I certainly felt that. I was treated very unfairly at times by the press. But I urge everyone who's listening to you to turn to my second inaugural address, which was issued on the 4th of March, 1805, and I addressed the question of freedom of the press there, and said that it tested the principle of the First Amendment to see so much scurrilous and irresponsible and really ungenerous newspaper coverage that had occurred. But we mustn't succumb to the idea of censorship. We need to make sure that we understand that this is one of the costs of human liberty, that we need a free press, that even an irresponsible free press is better than one that is censored or in any way persecuted by government.
You agree that the press can be the enemy of the people?
No, never. I think the press can be the enemy of a certain individual, but I never felt that. I always felt that the press was a vital link in freedom. You know, I actually said to Edward Carrington in 1787, given the choice between government without newspapers or newspapers without government, I would not hesitate to prefer newspapers, because if the people are informed, they can govern themselves. But if they are not informed, they never know what to trust in government. So I believe in essentially an unlimited freedom of the press, even when it is unpleasant for the sitting president to accept what is published.
Do you think that the founding fathers gave the president too much power? I'm just looking at the sorts of things that the current president is able to do, strike or change trade policies, end the exercise with our allies, the South Koreans, on his own, this robust prosecution of families that are crossing illegally when so many people don't agree with it, but the president just time and again does what he wants. I didn't know the president had that much power. Did you guys give him too much?
I don't think so. If the things that you're saying are true, that means that you have forgotten your constitutional guarantees. You know, the first article of the Constitution is about the Congress, and the Congress should be the principal branch of our government. The second article is about the president, and the Founding Fathers deliberately attempted to keep the president within check, because we had just suffered for decades bad governors appointed by the British Crown and, of course, King George III. So we were working to create legislative primacy and legislative supremacy, and we worked hard to put a straitjacket around the powers of the president. So if the president in your time is as powerful a being as you say he is, that's really because you have let that happen. In other words, the founding fathers didn't envision that. That's an evolution of your constitution that you have permitted to occur. And if you wanted to, you could pull back some of those powers and return to legislative supremacy, or tear up the constitution and start fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, you always say that. That's not going to happen. We're not going to do that.
You take my point, however, that the founding fathers would probably be appalled by the executive authority in any of your recent presidents. In fact, all presidents, perhaps since Theodore Roosevelt, that the founding fathers were highly uncomfortable with executive authority. And we did everything we could to prevent a kingship here. If that has essentially evolved over time, then you either need to bring the Constitution into harmony with that new reality, or you need to strike back against a runaway executive and restore the balance of the Constitution. You know, John Adams always said to me, checks and balances, Mr. Jefferson, checks and balances. And, of course, he was right.
You think the president's power of the pardon we got right? Did you guys set us up well for that?
Well, I didn't write the Constitution, I should say, and I wasn't there. I was in France. But the pardoning power is almost an absolute for the president. He can essentially pardon anyone he wishes for any reason. There are no checks on the pardon power in the Constitution. I would be sorry if it were used in any wholesale way or if it were used to protect people around the executive. The idea was, let's say somebody is prosecuted in Florida for some crime and the executive believes that there was too zealous a prosecution, or that there was a mistake, or new facts have come to light, or that the person had redeemed himself by exemplary behavior in prison, then the president steps in, but not to protect himself in any way from the criminal process.
Well, you know, 200 years later, lots of anything can happen over a couple hundred years, and guess what? We've got somebody who may use it preemptively. And there's nothing that the founding fathers, I know you weren't there, but I mean, they took your calls. I'm a little disappointed that you guys didn't have more foresight than this.
I don't think you should blame us, but let me put it this way. You have one remedy and one remedy only under our Constitution for a presidency that has gone bad, and that is impeachment. And I always thought that the impeachment clause of the Constitution was too narrowly drawn, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors. It seemed to me that there ought to be a more elastic clause there so that we could get rid of presidents who were incompetent or senile or who were engaged in malfeasance, were fundamentally misrepresenting the will of the American people, but perhaps had not committed any prosecutable crimes. That the narrowness of the impeachment clause, I think, has prevented you from ever having a successful impeachment of a president.
Well, we did amend the Constitution in case of some kind of incompetence of the president, but again, I think that's too narrowly defined. It requires the president's party or cabinet. It requires the vice president to endorse that, and unless the guy's completely gone loopy, I cannot imagine a scenario where even now that would be enacted. You know what I mean?
Yes, but ask yourself this question, John. If the impeachment power of the Congress turned into a political tool, and it was used because they didn't happen to like the president or his policies or his party,
That
would be a terrible mistake. So you need to make sure the impeachment is difficult, that there's a high bar, and that it must be precisely enumerated for the flaws or the crimes of that executive. But if you make it too tight, as you seem to have done, you know, the United States Constitution is more than 200 years old, and there has never been a successful impeachment of a president. You know there have been impeachable presidents during that time.
Okay, do you have another minute, sir? I want to let my listeners text or call in. The number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You have a question or comment, an observation for the third president of the United States. He wrote the Declaration of Independence, you know. This is your chance to say hi. And then we'll be on stage Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. at the College of DuPage. TJ and I will kick things about on stage a little bit like this, and then you'll get a chance to ask questions, too. We've been doing this for about 25 years now, and every single show is sold out. So get your tickets now at WGNradio.com. Are you still there, Mr. Jefferson?
Yes, citizen. I am listening carefully to you.
By the way, did they have anything like the World Cup when you were president? Everybody, the whole world is watching this soccer tournament in Russia right now.
No, we didn't have such a thing. We had horse racing, and we had dicing. And as a young man at the College of William and Mary, I used to work off some tension at the end of a long day of studying. I often studied 12 or 14 hours a day. I would run a mile out from the center of Williamsburg and then a mile back, but we did not have the games that you all celebrate in your time, and I once said that games that involve violence and a ball are not conducive to character building.
Yeah, I think you got that wrong. Think about that, how different life would be if we did not have basketball, football, baseball, hockey, soccer tournaments for the kids, lacrosse, for crying out loud, golf and tennis. Did you have golf back in your day, or tennis?
Both existed. Golf was just getting its start in Scotland. It hadn't really gotten to this country, and I don't think you can ever imagine me golfing. Tennis has existed since the Middle Ages. Something called real tennis has existed in Britain for a very long time. Again, I never did that, but instead of all these gladiatorial engagements, why not have an interesting debate about Montesquieu or about the lost works of Livy or Aristotle?
Well, we're trying
Did
to
you fill a stadium for that.
You know what I'm about to say. We're trying to fill a stadium here, boss. A couple of text questions from our listeners. What did President Jefferson think of how Abraham Lincoln handled the press during the Civil War? Well, that would have predated you or post-dated you. You predated that, but do you have any wisdom for us on that sort of thing?
Well, I can say this. Of course, I didn't live to see the work of the 16th president, and I would have disagreed with his view that you can hold the Union together with an army. It seems to me that any state that wishes to secede has a natural right to do so. But if he disliked the press, he needs to get in line, because George Washington once got so angry about a newspaper that he threw it on the ground and then ripped the wig off of his head and dashed that to the ground and stomped on it. So every president has a frustration level with the press. Because everyone who's in power, and this was true of me too, I'm afraid to say, we become righteous. We think we know more than others. We think that we have a special wisdom or a special perspective. And when we see that others don't look upon our deeds as cheerfully as we do, it causes great consternation.
Yeah. All right, what about this? Two more quick questions and then a call. Ask President Jefferson what he thinks of the Electoral College.
It's time to get rid of the Electoral College. You know, I was a victim of it. I tied in the electoral vote with Aaron Burr, even though every American knew I was to be president and he was to be vice president, and that created one of the first constitutional crises in American history. The Electoral College was designed by the Founding Fathers because they were afraid of democracy. They wanted to put a kind of a hedge between the people and their choice. It seems to me that now that you have a wholesale democracy, you can safely amend the Constitution, get rid of certain of those medieval elements.
You think then that whoever gets the most votes should be president?
Yes, generally speaking, that's how things work in a majoritarian system. If I get 51% of the votes, I defeated you, even if you got 49%.
What about this? If George Washington was using his office to enrich himself, his family, and his cronies in various and nefarious ways, would you guys have impeached him from the 708 area code?
Probably not, because George Washington was such a national hero that we probably wouldn't have had the heart to do it. But I tried to get Hamilton removed from the cabinet of Washington because I was pretty sure that he was engaged in corruption and personal peculation. So we have to watch our elected officials very carefully. Power corrupts. And even George Washington probably could not stand muster of an ethics board or commission in your time. He never took a salary. He always said, just pay my expenses. But his expenses were often astronomical.
One quick question. Barb, you're on the air with Thomas Jefferson.
Hi, Thomas. I have a question. I know you spoke of disliking the executive privilege, and I want to know, how do you deal, or how do you, I guess, blame a president for following the rule of law, and he gets blamed for it being a bad law? And Lincoln said the way to get rid of a bad law is to enact it. You know, it's
well,
a bad law. You've got to get rid of it.
Just want to ask you to read your Constitution when you have a moment, because you will not find executive privilege or executive orders in the Constitution. So
you know
we
what
need
she's
to
talking
stay
about
true.
Here. You know what she's talking
document.
About here. As have some of our other callers, they said, look, the president's only following the law on this immigration issue. What wisdom do you have for us on that?
Well, I'll just say this. Every nation has a right to control its borders. Every nation has a right to determine who gets in and who's excluded. And if you don't do that, you have abdicated one of the fundamental purposes of government. And you can't have simply open borders, because it's important for you to be able to define what it is to be an American. I think that's very, very important. In my time, of course, we were eager for immigration because we had this vast Western territory with no people in it. I think that it would be a mistake ever to divide children from their parents at a border or anywhere else. That humanity must be the highest order of our elected officials. We're a republic, not a dictatorship, not a monarchy, not an oligarchy, not a military system. We're a republic, and human values, universal human values that know no borders, are essential. So maybe we don't let these people in, but we treat them with great respect and dignity.
Well, about that, then, you're a hypocrite, aren't you? Because that's exactly what you did with the slaves.
Oh, yes, I'm a hypocrite. There's no question about that.
By the way, I don't want to end on that cross note, but I just had to say
you were the one who brought it up.
Well, then I got news for you. The Monticello, where your famed home has lets us, as of this week, view Sally Hemings' quarters. I wonder what you say about that.
I can't speak. I'm merely blushing. I think there are so many things that might interest people about me. My views on paleontology, on library science, my Declaration of Independence, my book Notes on Virginia, my theories of agriculture, my love of wine, my interest in architecture, etc. There are hundreds of subjects that might be worth scrutiny, including my vision of this country. But what happened at Monticello seems less interesting. And of course, the Sally Hemings thing is really mostly about prurience. You ask the people who come to find out about that, they're not interested in the history of race or enslavement. They're interested in sexual scandal, and I blush. I merely blush at such a thing, sir.
You and I will be on stage at the College of DuPage Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. I'm going to give you a glass of Jefferson bourbon. Maybe I'll find some Jefferson wine. Somebody probably has your name on a bottle like that, too.
I'm hoping for Jell-O shots, sir.
I'll bet you're not. President Jefferson, we'll see you soon. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, my friend.
I am not doing Jell-O shots.